Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, how empathetic are you? What was your response? Well, we're going to learn a lot about empathy in this show, and so I'm so happy to interview a man who's devoted his life to empathy, and it's so great to chew on that word with Edwin Rutsch, the person who has a website called cultureofempathy.com. Edwin, thanks so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Well, thanks, Peter, for inviting me. Really glad to be here.
Well, I'm so glad that we could talk about empathy because I think everybody is empathetic in different ways. Some, let's call them very limited ways, in some very expansive ways. And so what I want us to understand is, you know, what it all means and how can we use empathy to make this a better world. So how would you like to get started?
Well, I can tell you maybe how I got started with empathy. I saw myself as a seeker, you know, having traveled around the world for like 10 years. And, you know, just kind of seeking for the meaning of life. And then from that seeking, I really came to see that people had sort of this common humanity. You know, I grew up in a very fundamentalist evangelical family, you know, saw myself as saved, had the whole that whole worldview. And then, you know, traveling, I just saw that people were pretty much the same everywhere in the world. And later, I came across the word empathy, and I thought, wow, you know, empathy is really what I'm about. It's about connecting with people, and that's the way that we connect with people. So that was about 10 years ago, and around that time, too, Barack Obama was running for office, and he said the country had an empathy deficit. So I said, oh, well, let me help out with that. Let me see what I can do to address this empathy deficit, and have been working on how do we create more empathy in the world ever since.
Well, I've read two research reports over the years that showed that in our country, only about 20% of the population had real empathy. And we're going to look at this word to understand what that means, because what does 20% being able to have empathy mean in order to make this a better country and a better world? How would you interpret that?
Well, I'm a little skeptical of kind of measurements like that. There's a new measurement that just came out that measured empathy in countries, and they put Saudi Arabia as the second most empathic country in the world. And I'm thinking, I don't think Saudi Arabia is the second most empathic country in the world with a dictatorship, with women being veiled over, with free speech repressed. So I guess my point there is to be a little bit skeptical about studies like that. You know, what are they really saying? You have to really dig into it, because in terms of empathy, I think, you know, we're really born with empathy, and it's much more prevalent than you really would think. That it's basically a basic biological function that we're born with, and it can be blocked. So there's a lot of blocks to empathy, and the culture can repress it. But I think there's a lot more empathy in the world than you would think.
Well, I think in Saudi Arabia, it's a good example of why people would think it has empathy, because they probably are very empathetic for themselves. You know, not necessarily understanding in the context that we would understand empathy, but they have their own, I call it tribal thinking, that in their tribal thinking, they are in agreement. And even a lot of the women are in agreement. They don't know any better. That's why, for instance, in Africa, they do those clitoral circumcisions, however that's referred to, mm-hmm. and women do it on their own children, and they're in agreement about that. And so you could say, well, there's empathy of agreement. So there's maybe, let's call it mental, cognitive empathy, where they're all in agreement. But then there's an emotional empathy that they're not feeling. They're shutting that down. They don't feel the pain because they want to have that other agreement. So I think empathy might be distinctive in those ways that we're seeing it in the big picture. We want really people to understand suffering and oppression and eliminate it in ways that help everyone. It's a collective understanding rather than a tribal understanding, which is always an us against them mentality. And we have to look out for our own, and we keep our own habits and our own, you know, oppressive ways that we work, and we're empathetic about it. So you can say that in Saudi Arabia, yes, they're empathetic towards their tribal needs.
Okay, so what I'm hearing there is that you're saying there's sort of this in-group empathy, like within a tribe, within a group, the people are empathic with each other versus being empathic in sort of a global sense, really listening to, connecting with kind of the broader, you know, world culture.
Right.
And you're kind of making a distinction between this in-group empathy and then, you know, kind of your other groups, that if you can empathize with them.
Right. So if you have a tribe that's oppressive to each other, and yet they're in agreement about it and have surrendered to it and are passive and against it, then you could say that they're all empathetic with each other.
So you're saying that if people are in agreement, that there's a sense of empathy then? Like, for example, if the culture says women have to be veiled, and there's sort of a cultural agreement, that you're seeing that as empathy? Is that?
Yeah, with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have empathy for that.
Yeah.
You know, we can feel for it. I mean, empathy, let's look at empathy as, you know, a sense, you know, there are different empathies, different ways to feel empathy. But we're feeling it in terms of a general suffering that we experience that we would like to see end. And so we have, a larger collective viewpoint on it.
Well, I would say that within Saudi Arabia, for example, you'd have to see, in terms of being empathic, is I've seen documentaries, you know, like underground documentaries where women are saying, I don't really want to wear a veil. I want to be able to drive. I want, you know, I don't want to get lashes, you know, for... you know, not following the dictates of the, you know, the kind of the repressive religious.
Right. No, I agree. So there's really trouble there.
Yeah, there's trouble there. So, and that's within the internal empathy of the society, that those people, that voice is not being heard.
Yeah.
That voice is being suppressed, and there's punishment and authoritarianism, kind of suppressing that voice. So I would say, even within, you know, any kind of authoritarian government tends to repress empathy in general. So there's kind of that part.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you that, you know, collectively it's wrong, and we should eliminate any kind of suffering to the degree that we can. So where we see it, but then I would say that, you know, many of those people are probably sociopathic too. I think there are a lot of people who can't empathize in ways that you and I immediately empathize. And they're not feeling the pain because they're tribal. And tribe is always sacrificing of others for the good of the tribe. And so there's agreement about that. Whereas collective thinking is always win-win. And we don't want anyone to suffer or lose.
Yeah, so you're saying you feel that, like, tribal thinking, you suppress yourself for the well-being of the tribe versus a kind of a well-being of everyone.
And agreement about suppressing others.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so it really is trying to understand, when we listen to authority out there, what level of empathy they're working on. You know, where are they looking for agreement? Is it a tribal agreement or is it a collective agreement? And I'm thinking about, the government in the United States now is not very empathetic. There's so many things that they're doing that you doesn't feel like they care. And yet they do care, but for their own purposes, not for collective purpose.
Well, I would step back one to one thing that you were saying about being about pain. That empathy is not just about pain. That empathy is really feeling into the experience of someone else. So the word itself, empathy, means in feeling and comes from the German word Einfühlung, which is in feeling. So the word was coined in around the 1870s by art aesthetic philosophers, and they wanted to explain the phenomenon of feeling your way into a work of art. So if you stand in front of a Van Gogh painting, then you feel that painting, and at first it looks very beautiful. You have this feeling, this felt experience of beauty and light and bright, and then you look into it longer, and there's actually you start feeling quality of sorrow, at least for me, might emerge. So I start feeling sorrow. And then as I look into it longer, I feel, other feelings come up, like maybe hope or hopelessness. And the longer you look at it, the more you feel into it. And so they coined the term in feeling to express that experience. And then later it was, translated into English, as well as then taken over in psychology to express, feeling into the experience of someone else. So as I'm sitting here, I'm actually seeing you on video here. I can see you smile, when you smile, I can feel, your face light up. So I can feel that quality of you. So that
What's
would
the
be empathy. And so
right?
it's a full spectrum. Empathy is connecting with the full spectrum of somebody's felt
With their
experience and feeling
spirit,
into it.
right? With their spirit. And I was an art history major in college, and my specialty was aesthetics, so I totally get what you're saying.
That's why you smiled so big when I talked about
Right,
it.
right. And so, and we can all understand what we appreciate, how we feel about things, and where our attention goes of this empathy of finding the spirit in things. And we all have different purposes in this life. Some people are strictly interested in the spirit of our planet and nature and how to help it be a happier planet itself. And so many of us are much more interested in us getting along better on this planet and being more helpful. And to identify ourselves, I think it's really smart for people to translate their empathies of where their priorities are. What is it that they have the most feeling for and are most sensitive to the spirit of?
So are you saying that people should be aware of what their felt experience is like where they have a feeling of life and energy?
Yeah, everybody's different. I mean, should we all be out protesting? Not everybody has the spirit for that, yet we can be very angry about what's going on and want to tackle it in other ways and empathize with maybe particular groups or see who's suffering the most. For instance, my wife is much more interested in violence against women and young girls, and so that's where she puts a lot of her attention. And so,
Well,
yeah.
I'm in the Berkeley area, and we've had sort of pro and anti-Trump demonstrators here, just since you're talking about demonstrations. And those demonstrations have turned violent, with people beating up on each other. And there's been two of them so far, and there's going to be another one on April 15th, which is Tax Day. And we're actually going there. We have an empathy tent, so we have a group that's going to be going there to listen to both sides, to empathize with the Trump supporters about what's important to them, as well as with the anti-Trump supporters, to empathize and listen to what's going on for them. And, you know, what are their felt experiences? And, you know, just we go there, we just offer to listen. We're here to listen.
I think that's very important. But I think what it is accentuating our antennas, making, you know, and understand what we're listening for. Are we listening for something mental? Are we listening, you know, for feelings? What are we picking up on these about these people that we feel that we can contribute to some solution? Some people are idea minded, so they want to hear the different ideas. They want to listen and understand the different ideas and find maybe some common ground, maybe some understanding. And other people are listening for the feelings and trying to unplug or defuse the emotions.
Yeah, we listen for anything people want to share. We sit right there and we say, sit down and talk about whatever has meaning for you. So right, people can talk about, like, one person I recall sat down and she had just found out 2 weeks ago that she was a product of a rape, that she hadn't known that. She was like kind of in a quandary, like, you know, how do I deal with this? How do I tell my friends? I don't want to like hide it. But yet I feel I don't want to be ashamed about that I was, you know, the product of a rape. And, you know, I just listened to her for, you know, 10, 15 minutes there, and she just shared her struggles that she was going through. And then at the end, she says, oh, thank you so much. I feel like a weight has been lifted off my chest. You know, she'd felt constricted. She'd felt alone in this struggle. And now she just felt having been heard has lifted this weight off, and she had the energy, I think, to maybe go and talk to her friends and, you know, had the sense of safety. So that very act of empathizing and listening to people is probably one of the most powerful acts I can see that there is. That, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you have to go take action, you know, lick some stamps, you know, do something, do a protest or something. Yet the very act of just listening to each other is immensely, you know, it's like it's a very important act. Not just important, it's life sustaining, life, you know, serving, it's life growing.
Right, but then people will ask you, so what about sympathy and compassion? Because you should have been very sympathetic to this woman, or compassionate means, you know, maybe you should have really been advising her better rather than just taking it in. So there are times when maybe those can play into it, but if you're a good listener, you might know how to, you know, better be a listener than a sympathizer or a helper, and, you know, mm-hmm, active helper.
Right. Well, sometimes the sympathy and the helping can actually block the empathy, in the sense that the dynamics that I see and is talked about in the, you know, in the empathy community, is at first you want to just really listen to a person and hear what's going on for them. That is the feeling into their lived experience. And that itself is just highly nourishing, highly supportive, like it was for her. You know, it lifted a weight off of her shoulder.
Yes.
If you take a sympathetic approach, it would be like, instead of really listening to her, I would say, oh, I feel so sorry about what's going on for, you know, your experience. It's like, I have all the sorrow. And the attention has moved from me feeling into her experience into my felt experience of sorrow.
And so, which is another negative.
It actually blocks the feeling into her experience.
Right.
So, you know, at some point later, when she has felt fully heard and feels fully a sense of connection, maybe I can share what's going on for me, and then she can maybe hear what's going on for me. But to begin with, you know, we want to hear if we can. You know, we want to create a mutually empathic relationship. I mean, it's not right. just one person empathizing. So the other part with the helper, there's also the helper, the fixer can also block empathy in the sense that until I really hear what the person has to say and until they're really ready for even requesting some kind of help, then that can actually block. Because again, it's my ideas of what I think you should be doing. And I know it for myself that when I'm trying to share something and somebody starts giving me advice, it feels like a burden. It feels like a heavy burden. It's like, don't give me your damned advice, just listen to me. And so there might come a point where I feel like I'm really heard, I'm really understood, and I'll say, what do you think? Do you have any suggestions? And then I'm open to receiving ideas and suggestions.
Right.
But it's empathy first, you know, any sympathy or helping or, you know, advice, you know, after the connection has been created.
These are very important distinctions that you're making. And I think it's really helpful to our audience to hear this. Because it's hard to learn how to be empathetic in ways that move things forward rather than create more trouble around it. Like, you know, these demonstrations, for instance, about Trump. Is it really helpful to go to war with each other in the street? Likely not, because then it just confuses the whole thing.
Yeah, well, we're going to listen to, you know, all parties as well as offer empathy circles. So that's the next stage is what is, you know, I'm talking about active listening, empathic listening, of listening to someone deeply. But then we really want a mutually empathic relationship. And so we listen to people. We say, you know, what's happening with you? We're here to listen. We're not going to, you know, give you any advice. We're not going to sympathize with you. We're not giving you pity. We're just listening. And then when people are ready, they can take part in a mutually empathic dialogue. We call that an empathy circle.
I think what you're saying is that being empathetic in a neutral way with people allows them to feel it out through you. In other words, you're a receiver without any agenda, so they can unload feelings, and you, mm-hmm. and your neutrality actually saves you from being caught up in it with
yeah.
them.
I wouldn't use the word neutrality, though, because I would say it's an empathic presence. An empathic presence is not neutral. It's advocating for itself.
Yeah, that's a hard distinction, though.
Yeah, but it's an important one.
Okay.
It's like there's a sense of neutrality. I'm detached, right? I'm detached from what's going on. But an empathic presence is very present. It's a very strong approach, and it's not neutral. It's for empathy.
Okay.
So,
no, but
yeah.
It's an important distinction that. Because it has to be more open than just holding neutrality.
Yeah. And I mean, these are subtle, you know, things
yeah.
that happen, but people can feel it. It's like when you're sitting there listening to someone or being heard and someone starts feeling sorry for you or has sympathy for you, you can feel it. You know, there's a felt experience that you can feel, and it kind of, you know, kind of blocks the flow of the connection. So, you know, we have to be clear on these subtle distinctions, because they're really important, that the felt experience, and you can really feel those differences.
Right.
And
well, I
we're
think
really trying to see how might we create a mutually empathic relationship that's, you know, deeply connecting and fulfilling and nurturing, and is also like a gateway to creativity and innovation.
Yes.
When we really connect with each other, we can see what's going on, and we can address the real problem and not just the surface.
It creates clarity.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wonderful. So I think for our audience, it's really helpful to just get our own senses of our own agendas and try to find ways to use empathy to allow progress to unfold in a much more aware way that we can then have more clarity to follow up.
Yeah.
And because we're in such dramatic changing times, and a lot of ugly things are happening in the world that have to kind of loosen up and change in ways that aren't necessarily nice. But if we're open and watching and aware, we can have the clarity to have better solutions and not make ourselves nuts about it.
Yeah, if we can connect, you know, at an empathic level with each other, we can. I think that does lead to a sense of clarity. You know, if you're feeling confused, like sometimes I feel anxious and confused, and somebody listens to me, and I say, oh, I feel anxious and confused. Just being heard by them, kind of the confusion and anxiety kind of dissipates because I have that feeling of connection. So that feeling of mutual connection is such a healing, you know, like you're saying, clarifying, it creates a sense of clarity. And the clarity is that we're connecting with each other. It feels pretty good to connect with another human being.
Yeah, I used to have great clarity of understanding that it's only the connection with people that really counts in life and not the story around it. And so the more we can find people we can feel mutually empathetic with, and that's the heart at work. And you know, that's that deeper love that we have for life, for ourselves, for each other, that is unconditional.
Yeah, that heart that you talked about, I think is the heart is a metaphor for deep feeling. It's like where the heart is talking about is a sort of a metaphor for the, you know, like this deep felt meaning that we have in our life. And that if when we can be heard around that and connect around that, it's so fulfilling and so gratifying.
Yeah. So I love this idea of promoting empathy and of what you're doing through your website, which has so many wonderful interviews and people talking and explaining different understandings of empathy that are so helpful. And that's cultureofempathy.com. It's great for people to share this with each other and help each other find our way being empathetic. So Edwin Rutsch, RUTSCH, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's so wonderful to talk with you. And
a pleasure to talk with you too, Peter.
Thank you, Edwin. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.